Some brands offer you low finance, or cashback, or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar, with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.
For members only. Golf Smarter number 433, published on April 22, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Every shot counts. Part two on Golf Metrics with Mark Brody.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Fred.
Thank you again. So now that we've kind of gotten an overview of strokes gained putting, strokes gained, how the golf metrics kind of work, but you got to look at the book to get a full explanation for yourself. I want to figure out how we can make this work for us. And, you know, yes, there's tons of statistics from the tour, and yes, it's fun to watch and see how they're using it. But on a Saturday for ourselves, that doesn't help much, right? Because we really cannot compare ourselves to the pros.
That's right. You can use the same idea to compare yourself to a scratch golfer, or if your goal is to get from 90 to 80, you can compare yourself to an 80 golfer. And this way of thinking, this strokes gained approach to measuring golf will show where you're gaining or losing strokes to any player. So if your goal is to drop 10 strokes, it will tell you where you're losing 10 strokes to your competitor or to your goal.
How has this impacted this information? How has this impacted your game?
Well, one of the things that, you know, I thought I'm a thoughtful guy and I'm doing all this analysis. It should be obvious to me, and it wasn't. So I will keep track of all my shots and enter it into this golf metrics program, and I'll get reports out. And, you know, I'd play, you know, two or three rounds, and I'll remember some good shots and try and forget some bad shots. But at the end, when I get a report, it says, I'm two shots worse this month than last month in my short game. And I go, really? I thought I was paying attention. But when you have a report staring you in the face where you're messing up, I say, okay, I've got to go to the short game area and practice. Or if it's putting, or if it's my iron shots, it will tell me, and it's just hard to ignore when you have the facts in front of your face. And so I've gone out and, you know, one week I'll work on my short game because it needs it. The next week or 2 weeks after that, I'll work on my putting. And so it really does to help to know where your individual strengths and weaknesses are, because it's hard to remember. It's hard to remember all the shots that you hit, and they all matter. They all add up, and sometimes a couple of shots that you forgot about can really impact your score.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How are we able to keep track? What's the method you use to keep track of this information so that you can analyze it later? What's the best? How would you advise us to do that?
Well, one of the things that you can do is just say, you know, look at the average golfer and where do they gain or lose strokes. So if, for instance, you want to work on your putting and you're trying to decide, should I work on my short putts or should I work on my medium length putts or should I work on my long putts? Of course, you should work on everything. But which do you think is the most critical putt distance? If you had to pick a particular foot, 4 feet, 8 feet, 12 feet, 25 feet, where do you think the average golfer loses more strokes to a scratch golfer?
I read the book. I would say that it's the 5 to 10 foot range.
5 to 10 feet. Yeah. So for amateur golfers, that's pretty close. For amateur golfers, it's 4 feet.
Okay.
There's nothing magical about 4 feet. If you want to say 3 to 5 feet, 3 to 6 or 7 or 8 feet. But what was surprising to me is how short the putts were that were the most critical or the ones that most separated average golfers from scratch golfers. And there's two reasons for that. One is pretty simple, which is you have more four-footers than you have 10-footers. And the other is that there's a skill difference between good putters and poor putters in the four-foot range. So you may have a lot more one-footers, but if everybody sinks their one-footers, it doesn't matter. But not everybody sinks all their four-footers. And so it has these two characteristics. There's a lot of them, and there's a lot to be gained from becoming better at them.
Yeah, so, and really, how many opportunities do we have to make one-footers? Because most of the time, you get one foot inside, and people go, you're good. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't even know. I have a friend that I won't let him pick it up. And he's like, come on, I'd let you pick. I said, yeah, but you may miss it.
Yeah, it's the 3-4 and 5-footers that you pick up that can really give you a warped impression of what your score really is. So, you know, you're playing in a tournament, you're not used to playing in a tournament in a, you know, club championship or weekend match, and all of a sudden people are taking tens on a hole because they can't pick up after a double bogey, or they can't pick up when they've got 5 feet left.
Right. Right. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I walked away from this book that I think was very helpful for me is that I've noticed that if I'm having a poor day of putting, if I have multiple three putts in a round, that will affect every shot that I take. It'll affect my attitude for the whole. I'll just beat myself up. I may be hitting fairways and then greens in regulation, stroking the ball well, but my putting game, that will impact how I feel during the day.
So I'd say a couple of things. One is that it's also true probably if you hit a drive out of bounds, that's going to affect your attitude. So it's not just putting, but one way to look at it that I find helps me a little bit is if I miss an 8-foot putt, the first reaction is I lost a stroke. It was a birdie putt. I really wanted to get that birdie and I missed it. But when you miss an 8-footer, you're not losing a stroke. You're only losing about a half a stroke because nobody sinks all of their 8-footers, and the pros only sink about half of their 8-footers. Mm. So, in fact, and of course, amateur golfers sink less than that. So if you miss an 8-footer, you're only giving up a fraction of a stroke, and you should think not about, oh, I just missed that 8-footer, but over the course of the round, you would hope to sink close to half your 8-footers, but you just can't beat yourself up over one missed putt. Mm-hmm. It's counterproductive because, first of all, it's not true. You're not losing a full stroke. And as you said, you don't want that to impact the next shot. Why should you have one missed putt then lead to throwing away more strokes after that? That doesn't make sense. Easier said than done, of course.
Of course. And now I can see that, you know, that it's my approach shots where I probably lose more strokes than anything.
And that's true for everybody. It's high handicappers, low handicappers, and PGA Tour pros. And I think one of the reasons it's so hard to put your finger on that is that proximity to the hole is measured in feet. And if you could put your average approach shot 3 feet closer, it just doesn't sound like much. If your proximity is 30 feet and you improve it to 27 feet, you say, so what? I was going to two-putt from 30 feet. I'll two-putt from 27 feet. It just doesn't sound like it's that big a deal. And that's just the wrong way to think about it. And what I found in crunching the numbers is that it's the shots that are in the rough just off the green that 3 feet closer, they're now on the green. That matters. Hmm. The 10-footers that become 7-footers matter. The 5-footers that become 2-footers, they all matter. And so if you put your shots on average 3 feet closer to the hole, you pick up a lot of strokes on the field or on your competitors or just on your own score. So approach shots are really, really important. And so, the long-term plan is for amateurs, if you can get better in the 100 to 150-yard range, That's the area that's most correlated with amateur scores.
Mm-hmm. Putting, so much of it, you know, it is important. It isn't important, but so many shots, it's so obvious that we're missing so many, losing so many shots there because you're in this confined area, and you're not making a lot of progress. Do most amateurs versus pros come up short of the hole in their putting? And does that have a significant impact?
Oh, absolutely. So I think one of the easiest ways for amateurs to improve is to focus more on the distance to the hole rather than the break. And I'm not saying you shouldn't think about the break. What I'm saying is that not all 20-footers are created equal. And even if you're pacing off your putts and you say, I have a 20-foot putt, you still want to look at, well, is it 20 foot and steeply uphill, or is it 20 feet and slightly downhill? That matters a huge amount in how hard you need to stroke the putt. And what you'll see between the best PGA Tour putters and average PGA Tour putters is the better putters are slightly more aggressive. And, of course, they have better distance control. And anybody can take a 10-footer and make sure that they get it to the hole. But the key is not ramming them 8 feet by. So you want to get it to the hole, but not too far by. So distance control on putting is one of the easiest ways that amateurs, I think, can lower their score. But it's not just pacing off your putts. It's also being very aware of how steep the green is.
Yeah, there was something here that kind of blew my mind when I saw, and maybe it's an error in the printing or something, but it talked about downhill putts, the steeper the green, the farther the target should be beyond the hole.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and I think...
Really, because I would think if it's a downhill putt, you want to, like, aim so it comes up a little short so you can let the hill, let gravity take over.
So that's very surprising, and I think... I can explain the intuition behind it, which is on downhill putts, it's harder to control the distance. So I talk about shot patterns in the book, and just like you have shot patterns on your tee shots, your putts, you can imagine a shot pattern for your putts. And so since downhill putts are tougher than uphill putts, the shot pattern is bigger, okay, for a downhill putt than an equivalent distance uphill putt. So if your shot pattern is bigger, that means to get it to the hole, you've got to be a little bit more aggressive. You've got to set the target a little bit further beyond the hole in order to make sure you don't come up short. Another way to think about it, which maybe is even easier, if you have a 10-foot uphill putt, you can be pretty firm with it and it's not going to roll too far by. But on a 10-foot downhill putt, to make sure that you get that putt to the hole, you've got to be comfortable in letting it go 2.5 feet by, again, in order to give it a chance to go in the hole. And it's much more important on 10-footers to give it a chance to go in the hole than to lag it to the hole to make sure you don't three putt. So, you know, from a 10-foot range, you ought to be thinking, how can I make this putt, not how can I avoid a three putt?
Oh, absolutely. But aiming past the hole, meaning if I'm aiming past the hole, and maybe I'm unique in this, but if I'm aiming past the hole, I'm going to hit it harder than if I was aiming at the hole.
Well, you want that. If you're aiming at the hole, you'd leave 50% of your putt short, and that would be a disaster on 10
But I'm talking about downhill. I'm talking about downhill.
Even downhill, right? If you aim at the hole, you don't want to leave 50% of them short. So I actually don't think about it in terms of how far beyond the hole I'm aiming. I think about it as if I have a 10-foot downhill putt, I want to hit this hard enough so at least 9 out of 10 get to the hole. I don't want to leave any more than 10% of those putts short. So I want to be, I don't think if, you know, is my target 1, 2, 3 feet beyond the hole. I think of, I want to get 9 out of 10 of these putts to the hole. And how hard do I have to hit it to make sure that's the case? And what you'll find with many amateurs and, you know, worse putters more so than good putters is they can leave 30, 40% of their 10-footers short. And that's really giving up strokes.
Yeah. And you're familiar with aim point?
I am.
Yeah. And we did a couple episodes on aim point with Mark Sweeney. last year. Is that what you used? Is that accurate?
So I don't use Aimpoint, but I know what it's about, and I know how they come up with the Aimpoint charts, and I have my own system where I can kind of replicate their results. What I really like about the Aimpoint way of thinking is that it focuses on how much putts break depending on where the putt starts relative to the fall line. So clearly, if you have a straight downhill or straight uphill putt, there's no break. Sidehill putts break a lot, but downhill sidehill putts break a lot more than uphill sidehill putts. And so if you imagine where your putt starts relative to a clock face or relative to the fall line, it really helps you with what line should you start this putt on. So I think it's really critical for golfers not to think in terms of just how much does this break, but where's the fall line and where is my putt starting relative to the fall line, because that will ultimately tell you how much break you need to play.
Another version, vector putting, putting those angles.
Well, vector putting is basically identical to Aimpoint. It's the same, and they have the same charts, and they use the same. It's actually the same number. So vector putting is actually no different than Aimpoint.
But one of the things that I noticed in your book that blew my mind is that if you're, you know, I generally look for the apex. People go, oh, just, you know, one cup outside. And I'm like, no, I don't look at the cup. I'm looking at where the break would be and then where it's going to make the turn. But your stats are saying that you got to aim above the apex there or it's going to fall below the hole.
Yeah, that's
blew me away.
Absolutely true. And you look at the data, and this is not new to this book. It's been around for a while, and it hasn't changed. Amateur golfers miss way more than 50% of their putts on the low side of the hole. So the question is, why is that? So there's several possible explanations, but one is if you aim at the apex, you will miss low. And why is that? Because the apex is where, you know, it's the furthest point or the highest point on this curved path toward the hole. But that usually happens in somewhere near the middle of the putt. In order to get the putt to go into the hole, you've got to start it higher because gravity will immediately start pulling the putt down. It will immediately start breaking. So to hit if your target is the apex, to hit the apex, you've got to start it higher than the apex because that first half of the putt, it's going to be breaking before it gets there. It's not like this putt goes straight and then it takes a left turn at the apex. It doesn't do that. It breaks from the instant that you hit it. And that's the physics of it. And that implies that you've got to start the putt higher than the apex in order to hit the line that you're visualizing into the hole.
That's what made Paula Kramer's 75-footer so amazing, because the amount of break that thing had was just remarkable.
And it had some speed going into the hole.
She just barely got it to the top of the hill there, and then you saw it turn and just take off.
If the hole hadn't been there, that would have been 10 feet by, and there's probably nothing she could have done about it. But that's also an example where you don't want to lag that one up to the hole. She gave it a chance to go in, and sure enough, it was really an exciting end to that tournament.
Amazing. It was so amazing. Let's talk about strategy and how we can be a more strategic in our game by using this information.
So one, we already talked about strategy in putting in terms of how conservative or aggressive you want to be, and it turns out that amateur golfers tend to be too conservative in their putting. But when you move off the green, it's generally the opposite, that amateurs tend to be too aggressive in their shot selection. And by
really?
That I mean that they don't pay enough heed to the hazards that are out there. You've got to give the hazards plenty of respect, and most amateurs don't.
Give me an example.
So the example that I have in the book, and there's other examples, but the example I have in the book is where you have out of bounds on one side of a hole, and the other side is just rough or not as as much of a penalty. And so, you know, if you hit the ball out of bounds, your strokes gained is -2, right? Because you're going to tee it up hitting three from the same spot. So you basically have used two shots and you haven't made any progress to the hole. So out of bounds, you will lose two shots. That's a huge penalty. If you hit it in the rough, you have somewhere between a tenth and a quarter of a shot penalty for hitting the ball in the rough rather than the fairway. So you're trading off a huge penalty for going out of bounds with a small penalty for hitting in the rough. What does that tell you you should do? Which is, you should shade the tee shot, your target, toward the rough and away from this huge hazard, which is out of bounds. And most golfers realize that intuitively, but they don't take it into account nearly enough, and they hit way more balls out of bounds than they should. So even with the same swing, I don't have to change anything about your swing. You don't have to go to a pro for a lesson. If you just take a more conservative line off the tee when there's these hazards in play, you can shave a lot of strokes off your score.
And when can we be aggressive off the tee versus being more conservative?
Well, if you're too conservative, so I've heard this strategy of, you know, it's a long par four. Let's, instead of hitting a driver, let's take a 5-iron. Then you hit another 5-iron, then you'll be 100 yards away, and then take a wedge from there, and you're going to do it worse to bogey. So that's an example of being way too conservative, because you can look at the data and do the analysis, and you find out that on a long par four, if you give up that many yards with a 5-iron, you'll be losing a ton of strokes. It's just not worth giving up 50, 60 yards by hitting an iron instead of a driver. And amateurs often aren't that much more accurate with the shorter clubs than they are with the longer clubs. So, you know, the expression goes, it's better to be long and crooked than short and crooked.
Yeah. All right. So here's something that I do strategically, and maybe you can clarify if I'm doing this the right way or if there's a better way to do it. Let's say, so on a par five, what I try to do, on a par four, I'm just going to drive the ball either with my driver or my 3-wood. But on a par five, what I'm going to try to do is get my second shot into a space where I'm the most comfortable, which is probably either 100 or 125 yards. Okay, or 90
yep.
or 125 yards. So let's say 125 yards is my 9-iron. Okay?
Yep.
So to me, it's like that's the club I'm most confident with. That's the club that I'm the most comfortable and feel that I can, you know, give myself a great opportunity to get close to the pin.
Mm-hmm.
So if my drive leaves me 250 out and my playing partner, his ball lands right next to me, my playing partner will take his 3-wood and hit it as hard and far as he can and comes up 30 yards short.
Okay.
And he's not that good at 30 yards in. So he'll get from 30 yards, and then he'll take two more shots to get onto the green, and then he may have to do, you know, we'll just say he gets two putts. So he bogeys the hole.
Yep.
Where for me at 250, I'll take my 9-iron and hit it twice because I know I cannot reach the green at 250 yards away. So
yep.
I'll hit 125 yards, and if all goes well, I'll take out the rangefinder and say, oh, perfect, I'm 125 yards to the pin, and then I hit that third shot, and I'm within, let's call it the 10-foot range, and I'm a very happy guy, and hopefully I can get that birdie. Is
yep.
that, statistically, is that the way to approach that?
So if you are this anomalous golfer that is better from 120 yards than 30 yards, you should follow your strategy. What I found in looking at amateur data is there are very few golfers that are better from 100 or 120 yards than they are from 30. Almost everybody would be better off hitting the ball closer. I didn't say everybody, I said almost everybody. So if you have the chip yips, if you hit a 30-yard shot fat one time and you scull it over the green the next time, then that tells me two things. One is, yeah, you don't want to hit to 30 yards. You want to lay back to where you've got a full swing or you've got a comfortable swing. And the second thing it tells me is you ought to get a lesson, because you should be much better from 30 yards than 100 or 120 yards. Every tour pro is better from 30 yards than 100 and 120 yards. Almost every amateur that I look at is better from 30 yards than they are from 100 to 120 yards. The data is crystal clear when you talk about averages, if you talk about most 90 golfers or most 80 golfers. But there are exceptions, and if you're the exception, then that points out that you're losing a ton of strokes by not improving your short game, and you got to go take a lesson and work on it and get better, because that would be an easy way for you to drop strokes off your score.
But as an amateur who doesn't get a tremendous amount of time to practice, I find that taking full strokes, I have more confidence with my full strokes than I do taking, you know, short strokes, as a 30-yard shot would be, versus pulling out a wedge from 65 yards, my lob wedge.
So let's change your example slightly, and let's make it a par four. And you hit a drive, and you hit your second shot, and you come up 30 yards short in the fairway, and I give you this free option. You can pick up the ball, walk 60 yards back, and now you have a 90 or 100-yard shot from the fairway. Would you do that if I allowed you to do that for free?
Yes.
Okay. Then
I've been working a lot on my short game lately, but I think that I think I would do that.
Okay, well, you are not a typical amateur golfer, because
no, I'm not. I don't think I am.
So if you take a look at how often golfers hit the green, amateur golfers hit the green from 100 yards or so, it's typically much less than 50%, say. Whereas from 30 yards, it's a lot more than 50%. And I think, you know, many people have in their mind, oh, I'm 100 yards away, it's just a wedge or a 9-iron, I'll put it on the green 9 out of 10 times. Amateur golfers from 100 yards put the ball on the green less than half the time. And so you also got to tell me that from 30 yards, they must put the ball on the green less than half the time also. Otherwise, it's not worth it, or it would be worth it to walk the walk back, you know, pick up your ball and walk backwards. And I just don't see that in the data. 30 yards is a little chip shot. You can if there's no bunker in between, you can take out a putter.
Good. All right, let's call it 40 yards then. 30 yards maybe not be the right example, but I can remember so many times going, oh my God, it took me two shots to get 450 yards, and it took me four shots to get the next 40, you know?
That's right. So, if that's the case, one of the things that this strokes gain analysis would show is that you're incredibly weak and you're throwing away strokes from 40 yards, you better go practice that area of your game, because it shouldn't be that hard. It's not that hard of a shot. And for most people, even most amateurs, it's not that hard of a shot, meaning it's not harder from 40 yards than it is from 100 yards. So, again, I know people that are like that, but they're in the minority. And like I said, if that's true of you, then it's an easy place to
focus on what I need to practice.
Yeah. To improve your game. Yeah. To lower your score.
You weren't really laughing at me, were you, Mark? yes, you are. Okay. I'm curious.
Maybe that's not the right way to say it. It's then obvious that that's where you should work on.
Right.
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 That's probably a better way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And to me, that's the point of this book, is to figure out what do I need to work on to drop those 10 strokes? Where are those 10 strokes going? Where are they coming from?
Exactly.
And it's and statistically, is it mostly approach shots?
It's mostly shots outside of 100 yards from the hole. And if you want to break that down even more, it's mostly the approach shots. So full swing iron shots for most people, or if you're a short hitter, sometimes 150-yard shot is a hybrid or a 7-wood or a 5-wood. And those, you know, getting the more of those balls on the green, getting those balls that are on the green a little bit closer to the hole is where you can save a lot of shots.
I think the thing that when I talked about someone were 250 yards out and they're just going to hit it as hard and far as they can, I don't think that they necessarily take into account all the trouble that they could get into, you know, how aggressive they should be. Do I really need to hit the ball as far as I can here? Because I'm opening the door for problems.
Yeah, well, you want to hit the ball as far as you can, taking into account the hazards. So you don't want to hit the ball, 300 yards. If that's where the fairway gets the narrowest, that brings fairway bunkers into play, or that brings water out of bounds into play for sure. So it's not just, you know, bomb and gouge or grip it and rip it. You've got to pay attention to the hazards. And, you know, going back again to the 40-yard fat shot that, one of the things that I recommend amateurs do is take a look at their awful shots. So in a round, you'll have one of those where you hit it fat, you scull it, the ball goes nowhere, or you miss a two-footer. You can identify those shots that really lose a lot to your score, and then see whether that's better or worse than the average golfer for your handicap level, for your average score, and then identify those areas where you need to improve. And many golfers, if they got out of a bunker in one shot, if when they're in the hay or in the woods, they get out of trouble in one shot rather than trying to pull off the miraculous rescue and then hitting it out of bounds, you know, following up a bad shot with a worse shot, reducing the number of awful shots is another kind of easy way to shave strokes off your game, or at least give you an idea of what you need to practice.
One of my all-time favorite lines that I continue to tell myself, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
I like that. That's great. I thought you were going to say bad shot with a bad shot, but that's very good. Never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot is great advice.
Put it in the book. and talk about golf smarter. Don't care about me. Talk about ingredients to making your decision. Things, the factors. What are the main things, statistically speaking, what are the main things we should be thinking about when we're trying to decide which club to hit?
So, which club to hit? The first thing is you want to know your club distances, and
critical.
It's absolutely critical. And if you, that also means when you're 60 yards away, what is my 60-yard swing if it's not a full swing? What is my 40-yard swing if it's not a full swing? And it's also, you know, not only your club distances, but it's your carry distance. So, depending on where you play, if you get a lot of roll or not, then a 200-yard shot may be 190 yards of carry, or it may be 170 yards of carry, you know, one with 10 yards of roll, the other with 30 yards of roll. And if you have a hazard to clear and it's 200 yards away, a lot of amateurs will say, oh, I'll take out my 210 club. But that may not be right, because you need to keep track of not only your club distances, but what are your carry distances.
Mm. And plus, they think they have a 210 club, and it really is 185.
Yeah, there's so many people that, you know, how far did I hit that drive? It must have been 250, 260. And when you look at it and, you know, plot it, it's, you know, 210.
Right.
And so many people hit the ball shorter than they think they do for a number of reasons. So knowing your club distances is certainly a good place to start. But when it's a question of strategy, I think of, the main ingredients are, what does your shot pattern look like? By that I mean, not how well does my best shot go, but if I hit 10 or 20 or 50 shots, what would that distribution of shots look like if I plotted it on this particular hole? And you need to think about your target as moving around your shot pattern. And so one ingredient is, what's your shot pattern? What is your likely miss going to be? The other ingredient is, what are the features of the hole and where are the hazards? You know, how wide is the fairway? Where are the bunkers? Where is the water? Where is the out of bounds? And you want to put those two ingredients together, your shot pattern with the features of the hole, in order to decide how aggressive or how conservative you should be. And clearly, if it's a long par four and it's wide open, you can grip it and rip it. But on other holes, you need to be more conservative to make sure you don't have one of those awful shots that go out of bounds.
I'm sure that you've been witness to this a thousand times, because we all have, and I'm curious to what your reaction to it is, maybe not verbally to yourself, but you may say something when you walk up to a tee box and your partner says, "Oh, I hit it in the water here every time." Right?
Yeah, when that happens, you got to step back and say, "Well, what can I do differently to avoid that?"
And they pull out the same club that they always use, and then they
right. There's another manifestation of that, and that's one of the fun things that I've gotten to do playing with some club pros and some PGA Tour pros, and you can see them from 150 yards, and sometimes they'll hit a club that's two or three clubs different than they did on the last shot from 150 yards. Whereas most of my friends that I play with, 150 yards is a 7-iron. It could be downhill, it could be uphill, it could be downwind, into the wind. And they might change from a 7-iron maybe to a 6 or maybe to an 8, but they wouldn't think about changing more than that. And the good players know how to adjust, more. And they typically take all those factors into account, and they're willing to move, one, two, or three clubs away from their normal club from that distance.
Yeah, I played Bandon Dunes last year, and luckily we had caddies, because there were shots where it was a four-club wind right in our face. So, it's like, usually I'd hit a 9-iron here, pull out your 3-wood, you may reach it.
And if you didn't have that caddy there, you'd say, 9-iron, there's a lot of wind in my face. Maybe you'd go to a 7, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right. Maybe. Yeah, exactly. and it's uphill.
And it's uphill, right?
this to me is interesting, because I live next to a country club that I'm not a member of. And I like playing different courses a lot. Mm-hmm. But country club players, I think that their handicap may be not representative of their game, because they get so comfortable with this course, so confident, they just know what to do. But if you take them out to another course that they're not familiar with, their game changes.
Oh, absolutely. I think it takes, at least two rounds and maybe more in order to learn a course. And one of the fun things I've gotten to do is go out with PGA Tour pros on the Monday or Tuesday of a tournament, where they're preparing for the tournament, and they and their caddies will map out the course, see what's changed from the last year, and they really develop a strategy to attack the course. Whereas I remember it, playing at Bandon Dunes, with the caddy. And I didn't know where to hit it or what club to hit. And he goes, just aim there, so I did. And, I took out, he saw I had a driver in my hand, and I hit it exactly where he said, and it went into the trees, because he looked at me and said, he's not going to hit the ball more than 230 yards. And I hit it 250 yards into the trees. And I was so mad, because I hit a perfect shot. And now I'm in the woods. That's a case of just not knowing the course. Mm-hmm. And that can really add up 2, 3, 4 shots easily. So having a yardage book, mapping out the course, pros do it because it's their livelihood. If you're just playing another course for fun, that's why when I go to a place like Bandon Dunes, I would much rather play the same course 5 times than to play 5 different courses.
Yeah. Sometimes I find it to be an advantage of, you know, just tell me my target line here. I've never played this course. Just tell me which direction, you know, and you know, if I don't want to go all the way, I don't want to be too aggressive, that I don't have these preconceived notions of what has happened in the past, so I can just relax a little more.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the goal, which is you approach each shot with what's my target, what do I need to do, and you just get up, and that's your entire focus, is hitting the shot, you know, in that direction with that club. And having a good caddy, which you can get at a lot of courses, is really helpful when you're playing, you know, a new course that you're not familiar with.
Well, Mark, this has been a graduate level education. I truly appreciate your time. The book, this is Mark Brody. It's Brodie. The website is everyshotcounts.com. Just to give you a little more about the book. And the book, Every Shot Counts, Using the Revolutionary Strokes Gained Approach to Improve Your Golf Performance and Strategy. It's available in our Golfer's Mart. And it is an important book to have in your library because it's going to change the way you think about your game. And it's a necessary change in your thought process because they're doing it on the tour, too. And if we buy balls that they play on the tour, if we buy equipment they play on the tour, then you should be thinking like tour players. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely agree that, as I mentioned, the PGA Tour players not only hit better shots, but they think better. And I hope that that this book gives you a little bit of a clue or insight into how they think. And it's meant for the average golfer. It's not meant for the graduate student of golf. So I think anybody can read this and get a little bit of value and hopefully a little bit of fun and a couple of good stories out of it.
If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.